Big Ten Plus 4 is a member of Odd Pods Media and ASAP All Sports All Plays Network.
Welcome in to Big Ten Plus 4. That's Sam Sprunger. I'm Dalton Shetler. Sam had a little night at the Roxbury there.
That is exactly that. Every time I hear the theme song, it's like, what is love? You get that whole head bop into it. Yeah, that's exactly. I'm glad you nailed it. For being horrible at pop culture, you nailed that one down.
I have surprises from time to time. I think actually I found out about Night at the Roxbury from Saturday Night Live. I think that led to there. So that's how I, yeah. So look at that. Hey, every once in a while, you know, blind squirrel finds a nut.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
We have clearly done too many shows now. So 31. Anyway. 31. Okay.
Yeah, well, we've done 29. This is 31. So our 30th together.
Oh, that's right. Because I did miss one. And by the way, for the listeners, shame on me. I will have a second week off. Yes. Thank you. Next week is the last chance I'm going to get to breathe before football, basketball, and everything else.
So basically May
drags me under the water. Yes, pretty much. So my wife and I are going to go on a small trip, so I will miss next week's show, but we still will have a show. Sam is going to have Tony from ASAP Network on, and we're going to have a great Big Ten Plus 4. And by the way, Big Ten Plus 4, if this is your first of the 31 shows, shame on you, as Sam says. But we're college sports with a Midwest perspective, blue collar and blue blood. We see things through the Big Ten prism, for better or for worse, while we take a look at the college sports landscape. And so, Sam, as we kind of start off there, last week we really pounded the Big Ten football upcoming season. Mm-hmm. We previewed the East and the West. The West we see as being wide open, very chaotic. We see five different teams with possibilities of maybe winning that division, really. You're only excluding Illinois Northwestern, which makes you kind of scared because you should never, in a year where it's that open, exclude Pat Fitzgerald, even though you don't really know what to expect from the Cats or what that roster can bring you. And then in the East, you see Ohio State and, boy, something has to happen to trip up the Buckeyes with all the talent that they have. They kind of have to get in their own way a little bit. So that was kind of our consensus last week.
Yeah, I think Ohio State, with as loaded as they are, they could stumble into 11-1 or 10-2. That's stumbling into it.
That's what happened last year.
Yeah.
Stumbled to 11-1. They did because of the defensive issues. They absolutely stumbled to 11-1.
Yeah, and so like I hated when, you know, no shock here, I write the show notes. And I'm going to the East and I go, Big Ten East. Does anybody think Ohio State's not going to the championship? And then I put anyone, but then I put, we also included, analysis of the entire division. It almost feels like it's Ohio State and just like, doesn't matter who else, it's just going to be Ohio State. And that's not taken away from the teams that are in the division with them. Mm-hmm. It's just they're that much better.
And I do think you're going to see strong play from the East. I mean, it's the East of the East for a reason. Michigan, I think, is going to be pretty solid again. Of course, they won the Big Ten title last year. They knocked off Ohio State 42-27 to finish out the year. This time they're going to be playing at Columbus. That might make things a little bit different. But also, you don't really know about that Michigan defense yet. You know that a lot of the guys who are expected to step up and take some of those roles, they're projected to have a good year, which is big for Michigan, but it's a lot of names being replaced. If you haven't been with us throughout the summer, Aiden Hutchinson gone. He's a Detroit Lion. David Ojabo would have been a first round defensive end draft pick had he not been hurt towards the end. Actually, not even towards the end of the year. It was during it was pro day, NFL combine stuff or workout stuff. You lose Ross, you lose Daxton Hill. Like, there's a lot of faces to kind of replace on that Michigan defensive side of the ball. Mm-hmm. People think there's enough talent there, enough depth to be able to make that up, but still, Like there's an uncertainty anytime that you bring any kind of newcomer in, right? So that's what they have to deal with. And then of course, Penn State, Michigan State, they both showed, well, Michigan State showed at the 11-2 year that maybe they're here to stay. There are questions about how do you replace Kenneth Walker? There are questions about that secondary. Can it be better this year? For Penn State, I suppose the biggest thing for the Nittany Lions, honestly, just looking at this, can they stay healthy?
That was the injuries thing that derailed I thought, them.
Yeah.
Yeah. If they can stay out of their own way. I mean, if they can remain at least able to go on the field and perform at any, you know, their level, you know, they're going to be pretty darn good. Mm-hmm. But if they show that they're going to keep getting hurt, I forget there were a couple of really big injuries last year that derailed
PJ Mustafer being one.
Thank you. That was the big one. But if they can avoid that, injuries happen. I mean, every team gets them and every team loses players from injury. It's a part of the sport, but it's making sure those key ones are the ones that aren't getting hurt. Yeah. And Penn State just wasn't able to do that last year. So I think you're right. If they can stay healthy, they may push Michigan State. In my mind, it's Ohio State, Michigan State, and Penn State in that order. Penn State might push to number two in that division.
And it'll be interesting to see. And of course, Sam, not as high as many of the other folks on Michigan. A lot of folks like Michigan a lot going into the year.
And that's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it. I get that absolutely they are talented. They have the talent in order to compete at maybe not the Ohio State level, but the Ohio State level for one or two games. And, you know, they only need to, you know, beat Ohio State once. So that part, you know, but they're not elite like them. I just think they have way too much to fill. I mean, you just went through the list. That's mm-hmm. a lot to replace. I'm just not as confident as a lot of other people that it's going to be replaced at an equivalent level, or at least a very close level of what they lost.
And that's fair. I think that's totally fair. And by the way, for Penn State, they bring back Sean Clifford again, his sixth year at quarterback. They do lose.
It really does seem like he's been there 10 years.
I suppose he has been there since Trace McSorley. McSorley feels like a lifetime ago now.
Yes.
What do you had? You had Hackenberg and McSorley and Clifford, and that's your last decade of Penn State quarterbacks. It feels like anyway.
But yet they've been good.
Yeah, last year you're correct, especially when they had Saquon Barkley with McSorley. Yes. Those were some dynamite Penn State teams. Oh, I mean, it was a Big Ten champ in 2016. But they do lose Jahan Dotson. It's a big blow to that Penn State offense. But I will tell you. At the Big Ten Media Days, had a chance to catch up with James Franklin. He feels that the depth that receiver room has can make up for that and more. Where last year Jahan Dotson was making so many of the plays independently, he feels there's enough depth from that unit that might be able to even – yeah, and it might be able to take the play to a new level. So that's going to be something
each,
to watch for.
Each of them improves a little bit, and that kind of makes up for what they're losing with Dotson gone.
Yeah.
Okay. And if that's the case, then he's got a good plan. You know, you have to have a plan. I mean, and what's the Mike Tyson saying? Everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Yep.
So week one, when Purdue punches him in the mouth, James is going to go, well, that plan goes out the door. Now we're playing by the seat of our pants because Boilers are going to take Penn State down.
And so that's a lot of the Big Ten East talk, Purdue talk, and some of the other Big Ten West. Go back to last week, check that out, because we get pretty in-depth with the schedules
We didn't do as much about the East last week, so that's why we kind of just went a little further on the East. We didn't go near as far with them because the West was our big conversation because of the uncertainty of it all. So I apologize for cutting you off there, Dalton, but...
No.
Yeah.
But... But if you're interested in previewing the Big Ten West, last week's show, we get into schedule, some of the different routes, why some of these teams might have an edge on some of the others. It's some good conversation if you want to go back and listen to that if you missed any part of that.
And we did that same thing with the East as well. But it, like I said, it was very glazed over comparatively.
Yes. We were running heavy.
Yeah. We went heavy with the West. So we kind of sped through. Well, and like I said, that, you know, my whole headline of does anybody think Ohio State's gonna, you know, not win the East, that kind of lent to us going a little faster over it, because it's kind of a moot point in some people's eyes, because probably 99.8% of the people pick Ohio State in the East. So we went a little faster on it.
And that's true, but let's go ahead and expand on that now to a national level, because if you have Ohio State winning the East, you probably have them winning the entire Big Ten Conference at that point, and you probably have them in the college football playoff. I assume that's correct, Sam, on your personal playoff projection.
I would say yes, but I would say there's a one caveat of if they lose and when they lose, that would maybe decide whether or not they get into the playoff part of it.
Interesting. Okay.
You know, because we're talking nationally, it depends who else is 11-0 or 10-1 at the time that Ohio State loses and who Ohio State. Let's say, I'm not saying at all it's going to happen. I don't even know if they play Northwestern. Ohio State goes to Northwestern and stumbles because Pat Fitzgerald has his team on point and they win.
That's, and for whatever reason, Ohio State's had those stumbling blocks over the years. Purdue Tyler thumped Trent them night on at Iowa.
Yes. So, I mean, it's clearly in the realm of possibility. It doesn't matter how great a team is, especially in the Big Ten. There are some times that teams will jump up and bite Ohio State. So if they lose to, let's say, Northwestern, and you've got Texas A&M, who's got a one loss, but it's to Alabama, then you have Alabama, who's, you know, undefeated. And then you've got, you know, let's say Clemson, who's got one loss and it's to a better team than Northwestern. What are we doing? You know, there might be five teams and Ohio State lost to the worst team at the wrong time. That could bite them. I don't think it's going to happen. I really don't. But that would be another caveat that wouldn't guarantee them if they're not undefeated.
Well, let's take a look at the rest of the picture, because you mentioned Alabama, you mentioned Clemson, some of those names. I've taken a look a couple of times now at some of the better teams out there and taken a look at some of the top 10s, the top 25s, and tried to kind of grade this out. And honestly, it's a little monotonous, this college football playoff, and we can talk about that in a moment. But
same teams over and over.
Well, Phil Steele has his four. And I have a hard time finding any different answer. He's got Ohio State. He's got Alabama. And, of course, Alabama brings back Heisman Trophy winner Bryce Young at quarterback. Yeah. And Will Anderson's on the other side of the ball. Georgia. He's got Georgia getting back to the playoff once more. And he's got Clemson bouncing back and getting into the playoff. And, again, a lot of Clemson will ride on DJ Uiagalelei. If he's able thank you. I knew you were going to make that joke. I knew it. But a lot of it will ride on DJ. If he's able to bounce back for a big year, I think Clemson's, again, because you're talking too about the ACC, Clemson's going to be able to run in that division. And by the way,
last year was an anomaly for them losing three games like they did.
And they had injuries. It was a and really disastrous year for them.
Well, at the end of the season. They were playing well at the end.
But then Clemson also does bring in a top quarterback in Cade Klubnik. So there is some depth and maybe motivation pressure behind DJ this season. And I'm curious how that turns things out there at Clemson.
Well, I'm just, like you said, it gets monotonous because it's the same 5 to 7 teams that are in the playoff, and you're probably looking more 5 to 6, 7 probably isn't, you know, if you include Notre Dame, say 7, you know, if you don't, then it's 6, you know, there's just, it's such a small rotation. And that's why I'm not, as a Purdue fan, I'm not silly to think that Purdue's even got a chance. Now, I would say that they've got a chance to get to Indianapolis for the Big Ten Championship, and oh my goodness, well, that would be a great. I may even go to India. No, that's my Christmas party that weekend. I'll be watching the game if Purdue would happen to get there.
Whoa. Hang on. I need to hear this. So if Sam is, or if Purdue is in the Big Ten Championship game, Sam can't make that game in Indy?
Yeah. Well, I don't live in Indiana anymore. So, but yeah.
How far is Indianapolis from where you live now?
About 2.5-3 hours. I drove to Pittsburgh this last weekend. So, I mean, like, I'm willing to drive.
Correct.
But no. My point is I have for the last, except for 2020, for the last 16 years, we've had a Christmas party every first Saturday of December. And that's when the Big Ten Championship games played.
It's true.
I don't think my wife would be very keen on me cutting out on that and going to the game. She would be okay though if I had the game on while at the party.
So Purdue's never been to a Big Ten championship game. Correct. The last time they were a Big Ten champion was 22 years ago in the year 2000. So
year 2000.
So
remember Conan?
This, no, I don't.
Oh,
this,
yeah. Anyways, go ahead.
Yeah. So this doesn't outrank the Christmas party.
No. The big feat would be me standing in my living room while at this party, because we host it, obviously, and having it on my television while I'm interacting, because normally it's TVs off.
Okay, I'd like to play a game now. And let's say this Christmas party can happen any time of the year. It's not the first Saturday. What sporting event gets Sam to miss the Christmas party that he has to be there in person for?
Okay, that's a great question. It really is. And I've got a great answer because of how I got married.
Okay.
So my wife, you know, Bree.
Yep.
Had always dreamed of a mid to late October fall wedding.
Okay.
Always and ever. I proposed on the last day of March in 2005, and we decided to go quickly, and she was asking dates, and I said, honey, and this is 2005, mind you.
Okay.
I said, honey, I love you. I will get married to you any day that you want. But if the Cubs are in the World Series, you will not have me 100%. And she moved it to July.
Because of that?
Because of the possibility. So right there, until 2016.
Bree should have known better. Bree, you had time.
Right. Yeah. But until 2016, it would have been any World Series game would have changed anything for me to... You know, would have changed anything.
Okay.
Any plans that I had would have been out the window because of the World Series. I don't know that there's one now.
Is there one in college at all? Could Purdue do anything in football or basketball to suck you away from something like the Christmas party?
I would say
a final
probably
four.
The Final Four.
Yeah.
That would be I'd be like, honey, the last time they were in the Final Four, I was like 6 months old, or 8 months old.
Barry Carroll.
Yep, 1980.
Leading the Boilers.
So that was the last time they were in the Final Four, and she would understand, and she would probably have, it also would depend how much tickets were and where it was. So if it was in, let's say the Final Four was in Indianapolis, pretty much no problem at all. But like if it was in LA, then there might be a little bit of an issue.
Well, I guess, and we can close out the Sam personal fandom closet with this. But so does Purdue basketball just rank higher than Purdue football in your interests?
Yeah. And there's a reason. My grandfather was a high school basketball coach for 30 plus years in the state of Indiana. And he was a huge IU fan, believe it or not. And I loved watching college basketball with him. And I can remember watching the Bob Knight chair across the floor with my grandpa at his house, you know? And so like, it just ranks. I've had personal interaction with Gene Katie, you know, mm-hmm. in the past, right above me right here is a note that he responded to me from 1994 when Glenn Robinson was on. I wrote him just a random letter just to wish him well or whatever, and he responded with, so like I've had that interact. I went to Purdue basketball camp in junior high / right up to high school, so there's just more, and basketball is probably my third favorite sport, but wow. I would say college basketball ranks higher than college football.
That's interesting. I feel like it's a unique take or palette of college
fandom. which lends to me that I pay attention to, you know, more than just Purdue when it comes to the college basketball landscape, just because I want to know what Purdue's going to be dealing with. I did never think that
St. Peter's was who you had to scout.
God, there's something with us, man, because that is exactly the train I was going right there.
Yeah.
We're in sync today. 30 must be the magic number.
So, well, you're right. Well, and you must know then what's next, right?
It would probably, I'm going to guess it's a whistle.
Go for it. Second quarter, we want to carry on some of the conversation we were having there, because back to closing the book on Sam's fandom, but back to college football playoff and some of that discussion.
Yeah, yeah.
So as Phil Steele, many other experts, and I guess myself see it, Alabama, Ohio State, you see Clemson with the route that Clemson has. Now, look, here's Clemson's schedule, by the way, because we were talking about them trying to bounce back to get to the playoff. Georgia Tech, Furman, Louisiana Tech, Wake Forest, that's at Wake Forest, NC State, at Boston College, at Florida State, Syracuse, at Notre Dame, that's the one to circle, Louisville, Miami, South Carolina.
There are two you circle.
South Carolina as well? Is that the...
North Carolina State.
Okay.
Because they didn't get to play their bowl game last year because of a last minute COVID cancellation, basically. But like they were looked at as being a potential top 10 team at the end of the season if they would have gotten to play and won their bowl game. Mm-hmm. They're bringing a bunch of their team back. There's been talk that maybe they're a slight favorite over Clemson to win the ACC. So whether that you agree with that or not, that just means to me that you need to give some validity to NC State and make them a circle game. Hey, we've got to be on our top game playing the Wolfpack. So I think Notre Dame and North NC State are their two big, big games.
And to your point, NC State, 17 returning starters.
Yeah.
Which leads the ACC.
That is one of the reasons why I'm so confused. I know it's basically you don't rebuild, you reload. But Georgia, are they going to be at the same level? They lost a bunch,
but they did bring a lot back too.
Correct, but they don't have 17 of 22 starters coming back though either.
No, hang on.
Granted, they've got a higher level of talent. But at the same time, that's a lot to replace. It's kind of the Michigan level. Like they're going to bring in a bunch. Michigan's bringing in a bunch, but it's not guaranteed to be at the level in which the last year's performances happened. I think that Georgia is, and I have an affinity for Georgia. I've always kind of just liked them. And, but I see that being a very big thing that could bite Georgia too. They may have two or three losses simply because they don't have the same level that they had last year. That defense was historic.
It was. It absolutely was. And you're right. They do lose a lot of pieces on the defensive side. They bring back three starters. Offensively, they bring back seven of the starters. And even though defense was the linchpin, offensively, you would argue the number one tight end in the country over there in Georgia. And make sure I had the name Brock Bowers. That's right. But defensively, you're right. It is a little bit parallel to the Michigan situation in terms of you're going to need people to step up, but the depth was there on the field.
Right.
Like during that season, like these are guys that were getting snaps. Sorry, my dog is going nuts here in the
background. She wanted an appearance on the show. Okay, get off her back. She's got an agent that is beating down on her phone saying, come on, you got to get some appearances.
She is she's a fan of the dogs. That's what it is.
Yeah, that's what, we all should be. I mean,
anyway, but no, my point being that there's a lot of depth there. That was part of the beauty of that Georgia defense, is that they were stacked a few deep, and many of those guys were seeing the field last year.
So you're saying the backups could be very comparable. The backups from last year could be as comparable in talent level as the ones that left. They just weren't as good as them at that time.
Yeah, I'm not going to say that, because last year's defense, you could make the argument, was maybe the greatest we've ever seen.
It's the best defense I've ever seen in my life. I mean, I'm just going to put it in my lifetime. That's the best defense I remember seeing.
Well, and it's important too, especially when you do the all-time conversation, because then there's always the era conversation. But like
blah blah blah, best I've seen, doesn't matter.
Offense today.
Sorry.
Like, well, no. But like, if you try to rank defenses where games were settled 6-3 and 10-6, it's a little different than these offenses where the rules have been changed to help the offense, and they're averaging 47 points a game. So
they're giving up less than 17. You know, the defense is giving up less than 17 a game. I take that back. Teams only scored 17 points on them. More than 17 or more points three times, I think, last year. That was Alabama both times and Tennessee.
They allowed a total of 10 points a game, it looks like. Last year, they only returned 5 starters on defense. So the formula is kind of there. In
okay, you've convinced me that maybe it's not as doom and gloom, but I don't know. I still guess I've got to see it. I mean, now the fact that you said that the depth did see the field regularly does lend to me that it will be a little bit better of a transition, but there's still, you're not the starter. You don't have that.
Yep.
It's a different pressure. Yes, it shouldn't be, but it everybody knows that when you're a starter, there's a little bit different pressure to not start out slowly, not to make a mistake early, or, you know, and you, maybe you're a little tight. Then as you get playing, you loosen up and get back into whatever. And it happens every game. I was a starter for a couple of years playing football, and I'm going to pull back to high school, but still there was a nerve every first snap. And then as you got punched in the mouth or hit in the mouth once or twice, you went, oh, hey, I know what in the world I'm doing. I need to get my head out of my butt and let's play.
Yep.
It didn't matter if we were playing Fremont or whether we were playing Angola, and you know who I'm talking about when I say those two schools. It didn't matter. There was always a nervousness. So that first string different may be enough that, you know, hey, it may be enough. I'm not 100% sold on Georgia as much as I'd want to be. I think they could still be really, really good. Don't get me wrong. And maybe even make it to the playoff. But I hope NC State runs the table and they make the playoff, just so we've got a different team.
Something different. And that's going to be part of the conversation in a moment, because I do want to ask you too. And I'm going to refer back to Phil Steele's preview with this. Who else could get into the playoff besides the four teams that we mentioned? Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, Clemson. Because if you look at the rest of like the top 10, number 5, it's Michigan.
Yeah.
Number 6, Utah. Number 7,
I don't see Utah making it to the playoff.
Well, the only thing that I was going to mention is if we look at Utah's schedule,
although they are pretty darn good,
they start at Florida.
Yeah, they get that win. That may really boost them.
Because after that, listen to the schedule the rest of the way. They start at Florida. After that, it's home against Southern Utah, home against San Diego State, at Arizona State, home against Oregon State, at UCLA, home USC, at Washington State, home Arizona, home Stanford, at Oregon, at Colorado. That's a manageable schedule.
Yeah, it is. Well, and I guess that the one that's kind of sticking out is it could be, it just depends how quickly Riley gets his troops in line. USC could be an interesting game with Utah.
Mm-hmm.
because you just don't know. Again, you don't know what USC is going to look like coming out of the gates under Lincoln Riley. But what Riley has shown in his first few years is there's going to be a lot of points and maybe not as much defense.
Right. No, it's...
and Utah can put up points. I mean, we saw the Rose Bowl with Ohio State.
It took for the Big Ten connection, it took 347 receiving yards from Jackson Smith and Jigba to get by the Utes. Like, Utah was that good.
They only won by a touchdown, right?
I'm pretty sure it was one possession. I can't remember the exact score.
Okay. Well, if Utah would have had enough time to march down, if they would have scored a touchdown, it would have been tighter. They would have won by a couple. Like, it's right. Literally, it was, and that was, I believe it, Ohio State scored 45 to win the game. So, I mean, it was a high scoring game, and they can put up points. So it's just a matter of, that could be a shootout. That could be 65-62 in regulation.
And Utah brings back 14 starters, and according to Phil Steele, are sitting there with a top 10 offense. So yeah, no.
Okay. So I could see, let's say this, I guess I could see Utah because of they're starting high enough.
Yep.
That helps when they have their little cupcake games that they do some thumping. They're not going to jump up as much, so they don't need to. So I could see them, if they beat Florida and they beat USC and they run the table ish, maybe one slip up somewhere in there. They could maybe make it. I could see them happening, slipping in. And that's if major things happen at the top.
Well, I was going to say, you're going to have to bank on stumblings. You're going to have to bank on Clemson not being able to bounce back. But one of the other teams I want to talk about is sitting in at number 7, Notre Dame. First-year head coach Marcus Freeman. Brian Kelly's gone. They're looking for their third playoff appearance. And if we look at Notre Dame's schedule, now this is where it gets interesting too, because they're going to start off with maybe a loss. Notre Dame's schedule actually seems a little bit difficult when you look at it. They start off at Ohio State. Then they have Marshall at home. They have Cal at home. Then they're at North Carolina. Then they're playing against BYU in Las Vegas. Then they're home against Stanford, home against UNLV, at Syracuse, home against Clemson, at Navy, home against Boston College, and then at USC. But they have a home Ohio State, an at Ohio State, a home Clemson, and an at USC in that schedule. That's tough.
That's three losses.
Three losses.
Yeah, I Ohio State's going to beat them. I don't.
Oh, that one wasn't the one I was surprised with.
I think USC is going to beat them.
Really?
Here's the thing. I do think USC is going to be good this year. So it could be, I don't know if they're in different divisions, but Utah and USC could play. If they're not in the same division, they might be in the championship, Pac-12 championship game against each other. Like, that's how I think USC's been down for so long. Lincoln Riley proved going into Oklahoma that it doesn't matter. Don't play the, well, he couldn't win the big one. I don't care. He proved that he could put points on the board and win ball games at Oklahoma. Doesn't matter that he didn't win the big one. He won games. That's a reason why USC went out and got him and paid, what, $15 million for him or whatever absurd amount of money that they're giving him. He's going to win games, and it's going to be immediately, I think. Now,
and of course, that's, they get just Caleb me. Williams.
Yeah, they got his quarterback from Oklahoma.
And the number one wide receiver unit in the country, USC does.
So twice. I think USC goes in, and here's what I think on that one. Notre Dame's not going to be able to put up enough points. That's okay. Just going to be simply their shortcoming against USC, and USC is going to beat them. I think Clemson's going to come into South Bend and beat them.
Interesting.
So okay. I think all three of those games, and it's not a knock on Notre Dame's talent. I just think that it's, those kids are great, football players or whatever. I just think these teams have better ones right now.
Man, so you have Notre Dame not winning a single marquee game this upcoming year.
If you were asking me in August, early August, of what I think those three games will go, I would say they're all three losses.
Wow. South Bend, look away. Or put up one of posters of Sam when he comes rolling around.
Yeah, don't look at the I just was in South Bend a couple weeks ago. Wasn't to go to Notre Dame, but I was there.
If you go back to Phil Steele's top 10, we'll round out the top 10 real quick.
Yeah.
At number 8, Oklahoma. And that kind of fits in with the conversation you're just having about Lincoln Riley leaving. Yeah. You bring Venables, gets that head coaching job over there.
I'm not surprised that he got a big gig as his first, head gig. I think they're going to be pretty good too. I don't think that they're going to be at the same level that they've been, but I think it's just going to be one of those that they're transitioning to Venables, so it might be a little rocky. I don't know. I haven't seen him as a head coach, so I'm not really sure how he's going to work his way. You know, how does his culture transition in Norman? You know?
Yeah. I'm curious to see that too. That's kind of exactly where I'm sitting.
Yeah. Wow. I'm on the same. We are on like, I need to stop.
This has been a show of chemistry.
Knock on wood, because I don't want this to screw up. I did really well in chemistry in high school too, by the way.
I didn't at all. So number 9, Texas A&M. A&M, led by Jimbo Fisher, they had a great season last year, but they're also pumping out some of the best recruiting classes, if not the best recruiting class last year there at College Station. So Texas A&M comes in at number 9. Can they make a mess in the SEC?
I think they can. I don't know that this is the year that they go and run the table and become a CFP team, but I think they're very within a couple of years of being maybe the national favorite to win the title. Like that's, and it all depends on how that recruiting class pans out and develops and turns into what they think that they should be, because I think they're really good. They got a lot in place. They're going to do really well this year, but I don't know that they're ready to get into the CFPs, but I think they can make a huge mess of things, which is awful fun for teams. Yeah.
And that needs to happen. College football needs some of that. I would love
to see them beat Alabama and then lose to Vanderbilt, because then it takes both of them out. Alabama, you lost to Texas A&M, who just lost to Vanderbilt. Yeah. You know, I don't hope, things often when it comes to that type of thing, but yeah, I would like to see them cause a mess and then lose to just a couple horrible teams, just so it invalidates those teams this year.
So we can
get 3 of 4 new CFP teams.
Number 10 for Phil Steele is Oregon. This one's interesting to me too, because much like the Oklahoma conversation, you're talking about a new head coach in Eugene, because Mario Cristobal went down and took the Miami job. So Oregon still sits at number 10, even though they have a brand new head coach.
I don't know how to feel about Oregon. I really don't. I can remember the Donald Duck on yellow helmet. You know, it's a retro helmet now, but I can remember that's when they wore those. I became a fan of Oregon when they played Penn State back in 96 in the Rose Bowl. Well, it'd have been maybe 97 Rose Bowl, maybe. Okay. I'm not 100% sure.
Taking your word for it.
But Penn State was number 2 in the country, and they were new to the Big Ten, and I was just like, come on, Oregon. I'd never seen Oregon perform well enough to make it to, because they went through a big time where they were horrible. So I can remember Oregon back then, and then they had a few more years. Now they're just always putting up points, and they wear 75 different uniforms. Sometimes they change at halftime. I mean, I don't know. I know I absolutely said nothing about this year's Oregon team, because I don't know how to feel.
Well, and this is where it gets a little bit interesting too, is you talk about culture shifts. There might be one there in Eugene a little bit, because you're right. The Pac-12 as an entire conference has been high on offense, but Dan Lanning getting that job there at Oregon, where this is his first go round as head coach, but the name Dan Lanning might ring a bell to some, as he was the defensive coordinator the last 3 years at Georgia for, again, one of the best defenses, if not the best defense we've seen in our lives.
There's another thing. There's another reason why I think maybe Georgia takes a step back a little bit. They're losing
Dan Lanning. They lose the Lanning effect.
Yeah. Yeah, because he's not pulling or pushing the buttons. Now, granted, a lot of it is reaction on the field, but there's still personnel and those things that he decided on that just all clicked. So I don't know. Maybe that that detracts from them. But anyways, let's get back to landing at Oregon now.
Yeah, well, and to see what that does for Oregon this upcoming year, we'll have to find out. But that was the top 10 for Phil Steele heading into this year.
Oh, I don't know that any of them move in, though, on that top four.
And so it might just end up being more the same. And I tell you what, on the other side of the halftime break, we haven't talked about this in a while, but maybe we revisit our conversation about college football playoff expansion, because this being the same product year in, year out, has gotten a little boring, a little monotonous, a little stale. And I think it needs a little bit of a facelift. We can talk about that when we come back from the halftime break.
Halftime. You are listening to Big Ten Plus Four, hosted on Anchor and StreamYard.
Hey, I'm Pantsless Aaron.
This is Stevie.
And I'm Augie.
And we are BFYTW, a podcast all about playing games and having fun. Our games are usually based on British panel shows and game shows, but we'll play anything that captures our attention and imagination. Why? It's right there in the title.
You'll never guess what the F stands for.
Hi, I'm Shannon.
I'm Jamie.
We're Married with Television, marriedwithtv.com. We are a couple of Hollywood normies on the outskirts of the film and TV industry, and we talk about our favorite TV shows, music, and movies, and sometimes they talk back to us.
Sometimes they do.
Our podcast is Married with Television, one word, on Stitcher, Spotify, iTunes, and SoundCloud.
Possibly Amazon soon. And we are a proud member of the Odd Pods Media Network.
Married with TV.
MarriedwithTV.com.
I clicked it, dude. I swear I did.
If you've been with us for all 31 shows, you know the running joke is that whistle right after halftime doesn't seem to always love us back. The third quarter. Tweet. That was a very whimpered tweet.
Because I'm defeated.
That was well done. Okay, so for the third quarter, we do want to pick up our conversation, what we were just talking about with the college football playoff and how this product has kind of been year in, year out, a lot of the same thing, a lot of wash, rinse, repeat. I did want to take a look, and I got it in front of me here. I'm in a different window. But for the college football playoff, we've had 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. We've had 8 college football playoffs so far in its history. And how many teams have been in the college football playoff?
10. 6, 7, 8.
13. 13.
Out of 8. Full, and that's 4. So 24 teams. And obviously the first year, all 4 of them were new.
Correct.
So, I mean,
you're guaranteed there.
You're guaranteed. But other than that, has there been a year that there have been more than 2 new ones each year? I doubt it, because it seems like if Alabama's not there, Ohio State is. So like they're overlapping in, or Oregon.
So it's interesting, Georgia. Because you take a look at the beginning of the college football playoffs history, and that's where you get most of the new ones, because it hadn't been well established yet or whatever have you. Right. But the first one in 2014 was Alabama.
Oh, I was going to try to get the 4.
Well, go ahead. Guess the rest for 2014.
I believe it was Ohio State.
Yep.
Alabama.
Yep.
Oregon was in there.
Yep.
Florida State.
Yes. So Oregon beat Florida State to get to the title, and Ohio State beat Bama, and then Ohio State beat Oregon. That was the first one. Yeah. In 2015, it was, do you want to run through these two?
No, I don't know that one.
It was Alabama, Clemson, Oklahoma, and Michigan State.
So 3 new ones that year too.
Correct.
So the first, well, and like you said, you're going to run into the new teams in there those first few years, because it's so new that they haven't had a chance to be there yet.
Correct. So 2014 is the first ever you get 4 new teams. 2015, you had 3 new teams. 2016, you get 1 new team. You had Alabama. Sorry. Yeah, correct. Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Washington. So Washington was the one new one in 16.
They didn't perform well either, if I remember.
No. Yeah, you do remember correctly. In 17, Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Georgia. So Georgia's the one new one that year. 18, Bama, Clemson, Oklahoma, Notre Dame. Notre Dame's the new one that year. 19, Clemson, Ohio State, Oklahoma, and LSU. LSU's the new one that season. So for the most part, we're seeing one new team each playoff run. But then you move to 20, you have Bama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Notre Dame. Nobody's new there. In 21, actually last year was kind of the anomaly given recent years because you had Bama, Georgia, but then you had Michigan get in and Cincinnati, the first group of five team.
Well, and the proponents of the CFP as it is now would say, well, look, each year there's a brand new team. Yeah, but we're tired of seeing the other 75% be retreads. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Well, real quick, before you continue on with the point, just to hammer it home, there have been 8 college football playoffs, correct?
Yes. We just
Clemson. Clemson's been in 6. They missed the first one. They missed last year's. Bama's been in 7. Bama's only missed one playoff.
No, is that the year LSU made it?
I believe you're correct. Yes. Yes, it is.
So a Nick Saban, former Nick Saban school has been in one in each year, either a former or current Nick Saban school.
That's true.
The year Michigan State was in there were still two Saban schools because, you know, Saban was at Michigan State before he went to LSU.
Yep.
I don't think he exited that way like he did the Dolphins, though, did he? He didn't run off and say, I'm not going to be the next coach at LSU and then get on a plane and go, did he? But it's exciting because it's the playoff. But there needs to be more fan bases that are excited about the possible winning of a game. Because I tell you, when I watch it, it ain't watching for the Boilermakers. It's watching for good, like good stories or, you know, hey, I haven't seen that team play, you know, in the playoff before. That's what I look for as a fan of a team that I'm not delusional enough to think has a chance to get there at any point in my lifetime.
So it's interesting, too, because I wanted to look by conference, because I think this really kind of hammers home what you're talking about here, too. The SEC has 10 appearances in this college football playoff. Bama with the 7, Georgia with the 2, LSU with the 1, right? Mm-hmm. In the 8 years of the college football playoff. So the SEC's had more appearances than there are college football playoff years.
So it lends to they've had 2 years where they had two teams.
Correct.
Both times, I believe, Alabama and Georgia.
I think you are correct.
Because I think the year LSU made it, they were the only SEC team.
Yes, you are correct.
Because I believe Alabama and Georgia played in the championship game both times.
Yeah.
That was the Tua bomb in overtime and then last year.
Correct. Yep. Nope, you're spot on. The ACC's had 8 appearances, 6 of them by Clemson. Besides that, Florida State won in the year Notre Dame competed in the ACC, so they count as 1.
I don't agree with that.
That's fair. I mean, that's kind of semantics. The Big Ten, 6 appearances. Ohio State has 4, Michigan 1, Michigan State 1. The Big 12 has 4 appearances. All 4 of them have been Oklahoma, and the last one came in 2019 when they were blown out in the first half by LSU and Joe Burrow and them. The Pac-12 has 2 appearances in the college football playoff, none since 2016.
So none are USC, which just blows my mind.
So you're getting a ton of SEC every single year, usually a pretty big dose of Clemson, and then you round it out with either an Oklahoma or a Notre Dame, and there's your 4 for the most part each year. And of course, usually Ohio State or some Big Ten team gets in the fray.
Has there been
somehow
a year that the Big Ten's been shut out of that? I listened, but I forget.
No, it's a fair question to bring back up. So 2017, no Big Ten team made it in, and 2018, no Big Ten team made it in. So they had a 2-year drought where nobody made it.
So for the most part, it's one of those that your Big Ten champions. Well, and I'm almost guaranteeing you that it was a year that Ohio State didn't win. the championship, correct? Was Wisconsin out of it? Did they, it was there, like we went over who, like,
no, I'm pretty sure they won those years, Sam.
Ohio State did?
Yeah, because 16 is the last year I thought before last season that they didn't win the Big Ten title because Penn State won it in 16 and Ohio State made it in 16 when they didn't win.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They Penn State won it, but Ohio State wasn't in the championship, but they'd won, they'd competed well enough to be in the top four.
2017, Ohio State wins the Big Ten, does not make it into the college football playoff.
How many losses did they have?
They had two overall.
Okay.
So let me click on that season. I know one of them, I believe, was the at Iowa game that year.
I believe so.
Yeah, at Iowa. Purdue. They lost 55-24. Purdue was 18.
18. That's what I meant.
So they lost to Oklahoma at home in 17 and then lost at Iowa.
That was the Baker Mayfield flag at midfield. He had to apologize for that.
Then 2018, they only had one loss.
And that was to Purdue?
They had one loss and didn't make the playoff. Yeah, the one loss was Purdue.
I had until they got beat by Oregon last year and then subsequently Michigan, Purdue was the last regular season loss. And I would tell every Ohio State fan that. Well, oh, who's your team? Right. Purdue. They're the last team to beat Ohio State during the regular season.
You're right, and that's a good thing to flex as a Purdue fan, but the only thing I had to flex. Thing, Ryan Day was undefeated in Big Ten play before that Michigan loss. He was like 23-0. That's just ridiculous.
Hey. He starts off this season with a one-game
losing streak.
Big Ten losing streak.
Yeah, I guess. But like,
it
so
needs
it,
to expand.
So I'm in favor of expansion as well. And the big thing that I want to see with it, because this is where the whole debate sits with college football playoff expansion between the conferences. The SEC does not want automatic qualifiers because the SEC is saying, look, we have an 8-year playoff history. And in those 8 years, we've had 10 teams in. And most of the time, our teams are winning the national titles. We have the best conference. We have the best teams. So don't do automatic qualifiers. Do by the best teams, because we're going to get more of the best teams in than anybody else. And that's how the SEC wants to play this.
Of course they do.
Yes. And for the Big Ten and so many of the others, they want automatic qualifiers. And that is the correct way to go, because what's the best sporting event in the world? And I think you know exactly where I'm going to go here.
Are we talking about the rather large gathering in March?
Yes.
Where they do some two steps and whatnot?
March Madness. Yes. The beauty of it is everybody knows the game. Everybody knows the rules. You win your conference tournament or your conference, whatever the conference rules are, you get in. You go to the big dance. You win your way in. You earn your way in. Part of the beauty of getting rid of BCS or getting rid of riders voting on who gets to be the national champion is you're taking the arbitrary, the objectiveness out of some of this. And the beauty of the playoff was, hey, instead of just speculating who actually is the best team, why don't we have them play it out there? But what's really funny about this, Sam, is the way that we're getting to that playoff is we're objectively saying, I think there's more talent on that roster, instead of really looking at the body of work. We're grading things on talent instead of earning, which was kind of the purpose of this whole thing, is to let's get a true national champion. But the way we're going to vote those teams in there to be eligible to play for that championship, we're going to say, yeah, I really like their quarterback. They could score some points. Yeah. I think maybe they should have the chance. Where really we should be looking at, hey, did you win your conference? Yes. Let's go. You want a Power 5 conference? You have a seat at the table to play for a national championship. And the beauty of that, Sam, besides that you have winners. You have winners in every pocket of the bracket of a college football playoff if you do that. The other part of the beauty is instead of Alabama, Georgia, and Clemson, where the entire playoff is based in just a little pocket of the United States down in the bottom right corner, you'd have an Oregon or a Utah. You'd have an Ohio State. You'd have an Alabama down south. You'd be able to touch all across the country. In Oklahoma, you hit the center of the United States. You'd be able to hit every region instead of excluding such a large section of the country for this event.
Do we have any sort of idea where they're looking as to a size-wise to expansion? Because it's expanding. It's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And which, to me, there's no doubt in my mind is good. I am fully behind you on the automatic qualifier. If you've won a conference, you deserve a seat.
Yep.
Now, I also...
Especially a Power 5 conference. How ridiculous correct.
And
is
that's
this?
That's what I'm talking about is... If anything, for the time being, there should be 5 automatic bids, one to each of the conference champions. Mm-hmm. Well, that one year that Ohio State didn't win the conference, they took the conference champion's position in the CFP.
Yep.
Penn State should have had a chance.
Penn State beat Ohio State on the field, right. And it didn't matter.
Right. And my whole thing on that is Ohio State was the better team, but Penn State proved it on the field. So mm-hmm. they should have had a spot too. So I think there should be a combination of both the agreed. Automatic qualifier and the at-large bids.
Just now, like March Madness.
Yes. Now where that goes. Yeah. Well, yeah. Because what was it? Mercer a few years back beat Duke in the first round. That mm-hmm. doesn't happen if you just get the best teams.
Mm-hmm.
There are possibilities. Does it happen? Very rarely. That's why 2 seeds have a much better record than 15 seeds in those games. But it does happen. I mean, it happens more regularly now. I mean, look at St. Peter's.
Yeah.
So my thought is why not put those Rudy or David versus Goliath style teams in with those teams that are more than likely going to win the whole thing?
It blows my mind, Sam, that, I mean, sports culture, all we do is worship and mythologize winners.
Yeah.
I mean, you lived through the Michael Jordan days. The actual playing of Michael Jordan doesn't compare to mythology that we build up of Michael Jordan. And that's not to say that it was bad, but you get what I'm trying to say.
No, absolutely.
6 for 6, the guy's a winner. We love that. Like, everything is about winning, winning, winning. But you get to college football in this system, and they're like, yeah, I see you won your championship, your conference, but it just doesn't really matter. Like, it's
good enough.
It's the only section in sports where we don't respect winning, and it doesn't make any sense to me at all.
There's not a year that I would have put Notre Dame in the CFP. That's just because I don't like them. What if I'm a voter?
Yeah.
You know, what if I'm a voter? Let them prove it on the field. That's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with expanding. You know what? And do not give me this. Well, we got to look out for the players. No, you don't care about the players NCAA, or you would have made adjustments when you saw it coming. So don't tell me, well, we don't want them playing more than, you know, X amount of games. You don't care. And it's going to bring in much money, but you can move it. But you can take those stupid bowl games that have 2 teams that nobody cares about except for those teams' fan bases and make those early round games. So you keep the integrity of the bowls. They still get their money, but they probably make more money because all of a sudden you've got Alabama playing, you know, Oregon in the second round of the college football playoff, you know.
And the other argument that sits out there, Sam, is that, you know, well, there's only a certain amount of teams that are really playing at a high level. Like, sure, you can win your conference, but you're not matching the same level as Alabama on a year in, year out basis.
Right.
But what I would pose is, look at our 4-team playoff model. You're guaranteed a blowout already in these playoffs. Like, yep. That's happened year after year.
Yep.
Last year, you had 2 blowouts. Bama beat the doors off Cincinnati. Georgia beat the doors off Michigan. Like, you're already at a level where there's only... I mean, last year, it could have been a BCS year. Like, it would have been the same thing.
Yeah.
So, if we already... You don't have an abundance amount that are playing at the most elite level, then what's the harm in throwing in a couple more games and maybe with some teams that are on the same competitive level, a Pac-12 champ, maybe versus a Big 12 champ, you're at least going to get an entertaining game that matters in the college football playoff. That is something that people would tune in and watch despite the talent level maybe not being as high as Alabama and Georgia
and let's or Ohio State. Let's call it what it is. The Final Four is probably going to be those same combination of three teams or whatever. And
that we do it again.
At least we can accept that because there were other teams involved. That's when you hold the other teams, the other programs that are very rarely coming in and maybe winning a game. First, that's going to help them in recruiting. Like, look, we made it to the playoff. We won a game. We can pull you in. We might be able to, or we can envision you adding us to the Final Four. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when all of a sudden the Final Four is a little bit more of a big deal. You know, you're getting a couple of upsets to get to the big, to the Final Four. You know, now it's, you're in the Final Four. Yeah, we know what three of those four teams are going to be already.
And if your fear is talent disparity, then you should be very afraid because it already exists and we've seen it for 8 years. Yeah. So the idea of expanding
much longer than that, it's just, it's been exposed in the college football playoff because that's how we take the top four teams.
Correct. So anyway,
I don't know if you saw,
I know we're going to end up having the same conversation again, but
do you have a number in your mind that is more feasible and you think lends to a better fit than
I like eight, but I know a lot of the noise is around 12, and 12 is okay with me as well. I just want to see automatic qualifiers. I want to see like a miniature 16. Version of the March Madness. You like 16?
Yeah.
So hey, how many you games does that add?
Eight. Well, it would be eight first rounds, four second rounds, two third rounds, and a championship.
So the winning team and runner-up team would play four extra games, which... It's just two more than our
already going to play a first round CFP and a finals. So there's two. You're only adding more games.
So it's only two more games.
And how many weeks are off in between championship week and the playoffs? What, three and a half or four? Yeah. I mean, at least, or around four. So you could fit two more games in with a week off.
Not wrong. All right, we're running a little heavy. Let's go ahead get to the fourth quarter.
Let's see if the whistle works.
Hey, there it is.
It's got to be the third. I'm going to go in and change the third one. I'm just going to be like, tweet.
So if you're new to the program, this is the part of the show where we get to our headlines. And
I probably
we
should do my job then, huh?
Bring out whatever is each of our headlines. And we usually start with Sam Sprunger and the Sam Sentinel. What stuck out to you, Sam?
Well, Dalton, yesterday. Well, let's say it this way. Tuesday of this week was my birthday. I'm not looking for well wishes or happy birthdays. You already did that. That's fine.
Yep.
What I was going to say is we lost a legend on Tuesday in Vin Scully. And if you don't know Vin Scully, you know Vin Scully. Like that's who Vin Scully, his voice is absolutely one that you know, whether you know it or not, you know it. And kind of like Harry Callis was for the NFL, the frozen tundra of, you know, of Lambeau Field. That was Harry Callis. He is synonymous to me with NFL. Vin Scully is absolutely synonymous with Major League Baseball. And I grew up with Harry Carey, if that tells you anything. Like, I had an iconic announcer and I still knew and loved Vin Scully. The great thing about Vin Scully was, A, he did 67 years as the Dodger play-by-play. I don't know for how long, but I thought it was a thing. He never had a color guy.
He did for a while. At the end, he didn't.
Right, at the end. I'm talking about in his heyday.
Yep.
He didn't have a color guy. He was color and commentator. It was amazing. He would tell you wonderful stories, and he had that just that grandfatherly voice, and that's not knocking on him, but many times people put some very strong value to a grandfather. You know, I talked about it earlier in the show about my connection to college basketball because of my grandfather. that is important. And I can remember watching Kirk Gibson hit the home run against the A's, and Vin Scully was absolutely over the moon, and just, but yet you knew it was. I am saddened. I'm not a Dodgers fan. I am not a a proponent of the LA baseball teams. I don't care about them, other than I loved Vin Scully and what he provided. He was able to, he did what Pat Hughes does now. He paints a picture while telling you the story of what's happening at the game. You know, the conversation. Yes, you're listening to him for the game, and he's giving you every bit of that. But he's telling awesome stories about people that are involved in the game. Or this reminds me of, and Vin Scully did the exact same thing. So I know he retired a few years ago, but it was still nice to know that Vin was with us, you know, and now he's passed. And it's just a little bit of a sad day with the Sam Sentinel, but I still will recall many of those. Like, that voice is just absolutely unmissable. Like, you hear it and you automatically know that's Vin Scully, you know, and he will be missed.
And as sports broadcasters, I mean, he's where many of us draw our inspiration from. He's kind of the North Star you look to kind of see how you should be proceeding with different things. And you're right, because there are great storytellers, and it takes great storytellers to be baseball voices. But as you mentioned, some of those storytellers, they tell you story during the game. They're with you at the game, and that's how it all feels. Yeah. Vin Scully was unique and different in the sense where I felt like the game followed him. The storytellers do a great job of laying it out, and they're riding with you. It felt like Vin Scully had some kind of divine influence on baseball games, where he was the director and games followed his path as he told stories.
Wouldn't it be great if he can get the ball to the right side of the field? Next pitch, he hits it to the right side of the field. Like, it was, yeah.
It was incredible. It was eerie. Thinking about it kind of gives you goosebumps. Like, he was phenomenal and one of a kind, for sure.
And if I remember right, he got that job kind of accidentally, you know, like he was so young, and they, I don't know if he was filling it, but like, he got it accidentally. And then he Wally pipped whoever was supposed to be there, you know, and thank goodness he did. Because, oh my goodness, I am not downgrading whoever the Dodger play-by-play guy was before that, or radio guy was before that.
Vin was the greatest all time. Him and Doc Emery.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I love Doc Emery.
All right. So real quick.
Who, I don't know if you know this, learned from Bob Chase in Fort Wayne.
I did know that. Yes. Yeah.
So a little bit of a hometown connection to Doc Emery there. That's, I mean, right. He even came back the day that they put Bob onto the Ring of Honor or whatever with the banner, yep, or whatever. Doc Emmerich was there to run the MC of it. So it was pretty cool. I wasn't there special. On person. I just saw the video of it. But,
but it is cool. You're right. It
for
is
sure.
Absolutely cool.
For sure.
So real quick with the Dalton Daily. There was a story earlier this week that was tweeted out by Front Office Sports. Ohio State announced a $1 million donation from football coach Ryan Day and his wife Nina to fund mental health research at Wexner Medical Center. And if you remember anything about Ryan Day and the Day family, and look this up if you missed it or unaware, but the College Game Day feature of Ryan Day and mental health and suicide awareness and some of those different things really reaches beyond the game, reaches past the sidelines, and really hits society in a pretty core spot. So that was a big thumbs up to Ryan Day and the Buckeyes for doing that. And it's personal for Ryan Day. So I thought it was tremendous for him to put money where the mouth is and what he believes in, and really be an ambassador in that way. So that's a Dalton Daily. Congrats and great job. Kudos to Ryan Day. All right.
Well,
on the way
it was. Hold on.
Okay.
You reacted to mine, Dalton. No, I was just going to say that is a big move. And even though it's Ohio State, good on them for that, because especially the past couple of years, you know, mental health is a big thing, you know, especially when you're not, you know, you're told you're not allowed to go anywhere. You're not allowed to do this, that, or the other thing. It does affect your your mental health. So it's definitely something that's very important. And I'm glad that they were able to do that. So,
and we're getting more and more aware with those things. I mean, it's hard because you can't see. That's been the right. long time battle.
That's the big thing is, you know, this is an ailment that is all inside. It doesn't mean that it's not real. It's just nobody can see it. So therefore it's harder to believe. And we should at least take people at what they're saying when it comes to that, because it is a very major thing. It's big to stay mentally healthy. So,
and as he said in a quote, that there is help out there. So that's
for sure.
It was big to hear.
Yeah.
All right, Sam, on the way out, let everybody know where they can find us.
Hey, up at the top of the screen, if you're watching, you have the three ways to get a hold of us on Twitter. It's at Big Ten Plus. Spell out the plus, Dalton. Spell it out. Don't put the plus sign. Spell it. I know maybe it might not be the strongest suit of your repertoire, but it's four letters, all right? And plus four. So Big Ten Plus Four, spell out the plus. Big Ten Plus Four on Facebook. You can spell it out or put the sign. It doesn't matter. And then oddpodsmedia.com, where you'll find us along with all the other Odd Pods Media family of shows. Every Friday, we stream on ASAP Network, which is awesome. I love being able to stream on a given time on Fridays, and we try to do it at 8:45 because we normally keep under an hour and 15, which coincides with the morning show that they do every day at 10 o'clock. So we will be done right before, and then you can stick around and watch the morning show. But yeah, that's where you can find us, along with anywhere you find podcasts.
Perfect. So big thank you to all of you for tuning in and joining us again. I'm Dalton Shetler. I'll be out next week, but Sam Sprunger there will have Tony from ASAP Network. So make sure you tune in and join us then. Until then, Sam and Tony will talk to you. So long. Thanks.
See ya.